Full Frontal.
Do you remember Full Frontal? You would have been too young. I don't reckon you would have seen it.
No, no, no. I was about 13 years old.
Oh, okay, all right.
And I do remember Full Frontal because that was my first exposure to you as Fabio.
Oh, yeah.
The most beautiful man in the cosmos, including the black holes.
That's right. Did extended his reach. It was originally the world and then the universe and then the cosmos, which I'm actually not sure that's the right progression. It just became the cosmos because I think it sounded funny than universe. And then we included, negative space as well, thinking, well, what else could there be? How much broader could his reach be?
I remember at one point you just got up to, this is Fabio, the most beautiful man in the et cetera.
Yes, that's right.
And that's...
they covered it. Yeah, it became. Yeah, by that stage, the character was eating itself. So it was probably towards the end. I think couldn't have been bothered saying his own catchphrase.
Sorry, you were.
No,
saying
I was just saying. In the old days, when we did Full Frontal, it was literally a cardboard box, and we had a big wall of bulldog clips, like clipboards with our names on them.
Right.
So that sketches you put in that were dead, that were not going to be on, had a cross through them. And then they'd be stuck up like a head on a pike for everyone to see. So, and I used to put in a lot and used to get a lot rejected. So I'd have like my 15 scripts up there, dead for all the world to see. And occasionally you get, because Andrew Knight was the script editor, occasionally you get him saying, oh, you'd have it one tick instead of the two. One tick meant rewrite. He had to rewrite it and he put some suggestions down there. So he'd rewrite it and submit it and then if he liked it but he didn't think he'd got it, you'd sit in the office with him while he rewrote your script with him. Well, you know, it's Andrew Knight. There were worse people to learn from. I mean, he was very helpful. The very fact that he would bother to spend his time helping you with your script.
And so now you've asked for a script box. They've gone out and made you a box by the looks of it.
Yeah, and then I get it emailed to me anyway.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Emailed here, it goes straight here. But rather than me print everything, because I hate reading stuff on the screen, so I much prefer to read a hard copy and then make some notes on it. So, but yes, then the scripts get sent here and to my house, so there's no chance that I'll miss anyone's script.
Sean McAuliffe is Angry as Hell is going to be a topical news show. How fast is the turnaround going to be? You're getting scripts already, even though it goes to air.
Yeah, well, that's the advantage of not being a real news program. You know, we just pretend that things are important next week. Whatever story happens, I mean, there'll be a certain amount of, as we approach Wednesday, which is our shoot day, there'll be a certain amount of reshuffling of things, I would think, much in the way of a normal news program where we might drop some things, we might take something off the lead and put it in the middle, and then keep our fingers crossed because it goes to air Friday, and hopefully there's no, you know, core of the earth doesn't stop firing and, you know,
some big development on Thursday.
Yeah, the audience might think it weird that we haven't mentioned that the earth is dying on the Friday. They might think that would be the lead story instead of, you know, talking about Craig Thompson, important though he is. So on Thursday, I mean, there'll be some little gaps in the show which we can fill if we need to with material on the Thursday with voiceover and clips and things like that. Just in case, because it's such a perishable beast, the show, you know. And when we did Newstopia, it was only one day turnaround. We were editing all day, and then we'd race down to Federation Square and stick it in through the mail slot of SBS, and hopefully it would go to air.
Okay, what's this? Oh, it's Newstopia again.
Yeah, that's right. The whole pile of the cassettes by the door, you couldn't open it.
So, what made you go and do this show on the ABC? You're doing Talking About Your Generation. You were in Late as well, and I hear you've got a drama coming later on this year on Channel 10. Why did you decide you wanted to do a topical news show as well? Aren't you busy enough?
Yeah, I am. I'm happily busy. But you do this. You have ideas and. You know, there are other people come to you with ideas and you say yes and you assume one will get, you hope one will get up and you're not even assured one will get up out of the five that you've set up to pursue. So it just so happened that there were two ideas that did get up and that, as it turned out, were perilously close to each other in terms of when they were expected to be on air. In fact, Channel 10 and the ABC, with respect to Mr. and Mrs. Murder, the Channel 10 show and Mad as Hell, this one, both moved their broadcast dates and production schedules around so I could do both of them, which was really nice. Because what happened with Newstopia is that we were going to do more Newstopia, but it conflicted with TAG, and then sadly Newstopia died as a result of it. So we were lucky this time around. The Channel 10 were very good. And it also, you know, almost as a thank you, I guess. We did more talk about your generation at the beginning of the year, so it's turned out to be quite a busy year. But it doesn't always work out that way. I suspect it'll never happen again that I'll be fully occupied for the entire year. Most of the time it's, you know, if you're lucky, you'll have 6 months on, 6 months off.
Yeah, yeah. So what sort of news are you interested in then? Because a lot of news now is blended with light entertainment, even as far as newspapers go on the radio.
Mm.
So what sort of news are you interested in covering?
Well, you know, that's true, that's true. And there seems to be this mutant strain of news that has inherently got some leavening in it. And often that's not so much what's picked as the way in which it's treated. It seems to be that anything can be fed into this mincer of entertaino news. So we'll strip all that back. And because we're not a real news program, we're really just picking events and things that are happening in the world that we can stick jokes on anyway. So we might be part of the problem in effect of leavening something that really requires a bit, really should be attracting a bit more dignity to it. So yeah, look, the thing, our agenda will be set by jokes. You know, like, and we're not a real news service, so we don't have to be up to date. We don't even have to really, it doesn't really have to be terribly compelling in terms of news. And I'm reasonably apolitical, you know, I don't really have an axe to grind. I'm sounding like a very unangry person, but...
it was a very conflicting title for the show. I don't really think of Sean McAuliffe as angry.
No, no.
Or mad.
Mad. Well, you know, ABC wanted to call it Sean McAuliffe's Mad as Hell because they thought it sounded funny. Sean McAuliffe's Mad as Hell, meaning mad as in angry or mad as in just
yes.
clinically insane. But really, I just wanted to call it Mad as Hell as a reference to Network from 1976. And they said, well, no one's seen Network. You know, no one knows Network anymore. No one remembers it. Have you seen the film? Patichowski's?
No.
Peter Finch and sticking his head out, exhorting people to stick their head out of the window. He was a newsreader who went mad.
Mm.
And you're up in the control room, you're watching this guy, and he just calmly announces, goes off script, and he calmly announces he's going to blow his brains out on air next week for the ratings. Should be good, you know, we'll see you then. And everybody up in the control room is just, you know, making their notes, and they get out on time. And the producer comes and goes, did you see what he said? No one noticed.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
everyone's so cynical and weary about the whole thing. So he becomes a cause de, you know, celebre, and he becomes a... everyone wants to watch to see whether he's going to blow his brains out, but he doesn't. He ends up exhorting people to get angry and go to the window and stick their head out of the window and shout, I'm as mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. And he becomes a bit of a guru. So this is 1976, and he gets his own show, and he becomes this mad sort of priest of the airwaves, and he ends up being shot, I think, by somebody in his audience, which is something I'm reasonably hopeful won't happen to me.
10 episodes.
Yeah, that's right.
Something to build to.
Have to, you know, perhaps screen the audience before they come in. It was a great performance. Peter Finch won an Oscar for it. It was his last film, I think. And I've always liked it, and I've always enjoyed the writing of that particular film. So it's just entirely for my own pleasure that we're actually referring to it, because most people won't know the reference anyway. But it did provide a handy, like I said, oh, this is a great news set. You know, it doesn't look like they do now. It doesn't look like a spaceship. It's got wood in it, and you know, it's got old phones and clocks and things like that. So our set is a quote of that in a way. It's not a copy of it. It's not a parody of it. It's just... looks like a news set that you don't see anymore. You know, there are not too many news sets with a spiral staircase in them. They don't look like anything, news sets. They just don't look like anything. They look like the interior of a mothership.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, even 7:30 when you've got Chris or Lee standing. They're standing at that desk or sitting at it, but it's all lit. It's got lights in it and it's like some sort of. They're looking at it to look into the future, the mist. Very strange. Very, very odd. So we just gone that way. So it's not a news parody. It's not me pretending to be a newsreader and delivering everything very straight like I did on Newstopia.
No, but these sort of shows, if I know what it's going to be, are very popular in the US and are becoming very trusted. Jon Stewart was...
Yeah, The Daily Show. Yeah,
was voted the most trusted news anchor last year.
Is that right?
Which says something about the kind of news industry over there.
Because as he says, it's a fake news show.
Yes. Yeah, but he still tells the truth. Yeah. It's a funny show.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why it's funny.
The point across. So is that something, because that sort of show doesn't really have a presence in Australia, whereas in the US and the UK, they're around and they're popular. And is that what this is aiming towards being, to filling that
it's
niche?
It's definitely been inspired. I love Stewart's show, and I really have a lot of time for the Colbert Report as well. I just think they're great shows. And while I don't have a stand-up background, so which is Stewart's background, and nor do I necessarily have the character that Colbert has, because Colbert is obviously a embrace and reaction to right-wing media. We don't even really have yet. We don't really have right-wing. Give it another couple of weeks. We don't actually have, with the exception maybe of one program, and a natural leaning of a couple of other ones that have been around a while. We don't have a dangerously conservative media. Nor do we have a particularly left leaning media. I think there's at least on television, there's a sort of a tentative and what's the best way to describe it? A insidiously self-censoring left-wing media that are very, very careful not to be left-leaning because they have a charter that, you know, fairly and reasonably asks for balance. And it's weird, though, because that applies to comedy programs as well. I remember when we did the McAuliffe program, which was a sketch show on the ABC many years ago. Remember the commissioning editor coming in and saying, you need to have some balance in this joke. And I said, is the balance supposed to... The balance is actually across the 24 hours that you're broadcasting, presumably. You don't have to have balance in every single program or in every single line.
Every joke.
You end up neutralising everything, don't you?
What was the joke? Do you remember?
Oh, I can't remember what it was. I literally can't remember what it was, but it was obviously probably... We were doing that show when Howard was in, and the tendency is to actually...
Probably easy to do, or something like that.
No doubt. No, that's probably the level of it. why don't you make fun? Yeah, so that was it. That was interesting. But yes, for some reason, that expectation of balance... Mind you, I haven't actually had anyone come in and say, waving one of the scripts around and saying there's no balance in this.
Yes.
But...
They do it by email.
They probably haven't read them. That's right.
To see,
it's not in the box.
So
yeah, what's my point? Oh, I suppose yes. So that therefore, the natural tendency maybe of some media to lean to the left is corrected by, you know, their own sense of censorship. Is that the right word, or just sense of making sure things appear to be right and indeed are right?
Mm.
And the right leaning media, there isn't a lot of it.
No,
I don't think. I think certainly not as much as in America. So, long way of saying. Saying that I won't have I'm not a character, and I'm not a stand-up, so therefore I'll be whatever I am, whatever that is. Not sure what it is, really.
Can I ask you about your experience on Who Do You Think You Are?
Yep.
Because I find that show very interesting. I know that... did they approach you first as a sort of thing, and then go digging into your past a bit to see if you had an interesting backstory?
That's it. They inquire as to whether you'd be interested in doing the show, and then see whether it's worth their while.
Yeah.
See whether it's a good story to tell.
How much did you find out about yourself and your family on that show? Was it stuff that you already knew?
No, all of it was new.
Yeah.
All of it was new. I mean, they do say to you, okay, now that we've asked you, don't you know, go digging yourself, and don't quiz your folks, because obviously they talk to your parents, and then they go talk to your uncle and talk to some... you know, cousin who might have done some digging themselves, so that provides them with a good starting point, and then they go off and took about 6 months, I think, before they came back and said, you know what, we would like to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know they found something,
because they want to get your fresh reaction when you find
it out. Yeah. So in that regard, it's a bit like thank God you're here, and they sort of push you out. They say, oh well, here we are at the wherever we are outside a museum or a house that's been knocked over, and said, go and talk to that person over there, and then just film you going over, and you, that's why everyone's sort of walking up to people going, hello, apparently I'm supposed to say hello to you. Who are you? And you knock, I did, I knocked on the door, and there's a cousin of my father's who he never met, and he looks like my dad, and sit down and have a talk, and he gives me this brass plaque and says, know what it is, and they know where you're going, but you don't know where you're going.
Yeah.
And the hardest thing about it is to, because my knowledge of history was pretty dodgy, that there's enough for me to go, okay, pensioner guards, I'm thinking Chelsea pensioner, that's where they go when they come back after the war. Pensioner guards is probably a sort of part of the pension program. They're allowed to get a block of land if they come over to Australia and they guard on a ship. So you can work things out. And you have to, you don't want to spoil it, you don't want to go looking. So, but there were enough genuine surprises. I mean, I had no knowledge of the Crimean War, because I'm thinking, well, hang on, not 1850, what's happening there? I'm thinking Zulu War, might be Zulu War, but that's 1870 or something like that. So I'm off by 20 years here and there. And,
Have you done digging after that show?
No, what they're going to do is, now that it's finished, and I think the DVDs, that what they do is they send you the whole research they did. The funny thing was, when they told me initially, and they say, don't look up anything, I'm thinking, oh, what do you mean? Well, don't look up anything on the internet. Okay, see ya. I'm thinking, internet? I never even thought there'd be anything on the internet. No, you can't help it. Well, I found some relative that burned to death up in Loch Eel or something like that. He'd come home on a cart, with his horse and cart, but he's obviously drinking whiskey and he's set fire to himself with his pipe or something. So he's just this burning, mad sort of Washington Irving sort of image of a mad horse pulling this flaming wagon containing my great great grandfather. I thought, I won't look at it anymore. That's bound to be in it.
And it wasn't.
Too
wasn't
dull, apparently.
All.
No.
Too dull.
Too dull compared with all the other stuff. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so can I ask you, I don't know if I'm allowed to ask you about your upcoming project on Channel 10.
Yeah, you can ask me about that. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
It's a drama project.
Yes.
You're not known for your drama.
No, I'm not.
You say that as in like, and they're letting me do this.
Yeah, I'm astonished. I have had a bit of experience with, just guesting in other people's programs, and I'd be hard-pressed to tell you a role that didn't have any humour in it, but the role I'm going to play is going to have humour in it. It's not a comedy in terms of it being the structure being joke, or it's not a comedy in the traditional structural sense of it, but it will have humour in it, as life has humour in it, and for that reason the character will be a real character, because it's half my idea, I do get to make suggestions and I get to personalise the dialogue and make it fit, so I can cover my deficiencies I have. Plus I've got Cat Stewart, to work alongside, who's, I'm more than happy to ride on her coattails. She can, I'll learn a lot from her.
So when does that, is that in production yet? Or?
No, well, it's being written
at
the moment. We did some auditions this morning, but the rehearsals will kick in when the show finishes.
Yeah.
So that's in August.
Okay, so it'll be on later this year.
Well, it'll be shot this year. Won't be on until next year.
Okay.
About February, I think. March. Probably it'll probably start when the writing starts next year.
Okay, and one thing that I was kind of curious is, you came from a solicitor background for about 10 years,
mm-hmm.
and then you finally made the move over to comedy because your wife put a date on the calendar. Is that right?
That is true. Yeah, she did. She circled the 11th of November, Remembrance Day.
Any particular reason for that date?
Oh, I don't know. No, well, it has a significance in that regard, and it has significance as the dismissal, I think, wasn't it? Isn't that when Whitlam was kicked out?
I don't know.
Yeah, so, I think that was just coincidental. I think it just happened to be the date that was circled on the calendar. It was about 6 months, I think, from when Leandra did it, and it was a... It just seemed so obvious to her that I should have a crack at it. And I said, I don't know, we just got married, and we hadn't had children at that point, but we just got married, and I was 30. We literally just got married. It was 1989, and then it took. I took a year off in 1990, and then went back to work, and then you know, gave it up completely. I took a sabbatical just to see whether it would work, but having a fallback position of going back to work prevented me from actually leaping. I think. It just made me. I tentatively put my toe in the water and thought, oh, it's a bit scary. So I wrote some plays and I did stuff that was completely non-commercial and not sensible as a business thing. Mind you, I've never really approached any of this like it was a sound business decision. A lot of people get into entertainment now as a sort of career, like they actually think of it in those terms, and they'll learn it and they'll have ambitions, and I've just bumbled from one thing to another, really.
You've bumbled quite well.
Well, that's all it is. There's no plan.
Yeah.
Which is good, really, because I've ended up just doing stuff that I like to do or think is interesting. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I always learn from it, whether it's good or bad.
Mm.
And, you know, and the other thing is, it wouldn't matter if it all stopped tomorrow, really.
Yeah.
Suddenly my shelf life, as it will eventually... You know, probably happening now. I'll go off, you know, and I'll retreat behind the camera and hopefully write or direct, and you know, because I have no plan, I can't be disappointed.
It's a good way to do things.
That's
suppose.
Right. That's it's don't have any ambitions at all. That's my advice to everybody.
And just be happily
just float,
happily surprised by anything that does happen. Yes.
Yeah, everything's a bonus, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so. I suppose so. So, are you going to take any time off? Because you've been
not this year. No, this year's all done. This is a busy year, but that's all right. I don't mind that. And you know, Talk About Your Generation was a relatively easy show for me to do.
Well, that's been a few years now, so you've got a bit of experience on that.
Yeah, and I got to do other things, not on television, but I got to do other things. I got to write a book, and I got to do a tour with Stephen Curry. We did a stage show, and I got to turn up in Late or, you know, appear in a film or whatever, and I got to play around a little bit. And this year's just a bit more intensive in terms of TV work, but because it's different, because it's not like doing 30 weeks of fast
one
forward
show,
or something, you know, it's they're all very, very different shows. And this reminds me of Newstopia in terms of what's expected, and it's a lot more work than for me than Talk About Your Generation, but Talk About Your Generation used to shoot two in one night, and you'd start at five and finish at midnight.
I went to one of those once. I was surprised at how much was involved in it.
Yeah, it was usually wheeling stuff on, and
well, yeah, because
it was that sort of thing.
There's like one act, one question, one round staged.
Yeah.
And that involves all the setup.
Yeah.
And then you go and talk to the audience for a bit or whatever while things are wheeled around all the time. And was that by intention, that design, or?
Well, it grew a bit because it was supposed to be a quiz show where we could show stuff on the screen and just ask questions and stuff. And then I remembered saying, we need a bit of jeopardy here. Why don't we suspend somebody over a tub of scrambled eggs? Wouldn't that be amusing? Thinking they'd never do it, but we know. So we built these machines that looked deliberately like they were medieval.
Yeah.
You know. So there was no. The thing I liked about that show is there was no slickness to it. It was like that was on set, which I bought from an op shop in Williamstown. Someone genuinely painted their dog dressed as a pirate.
Dressed as a pirate.
And then died, and then it ends up in an op shop, and it's in the window of an op shop. And I thought, oh, that's great. That's got to be on the set. It is a good painting. I actually think it works. That person's love for that dog is apparent from that painting, and I think that's successful. That's a good painter.
I just want to know if they managed to pose the dog with the pirate hat.
Don't know.
Or painted it on later, because just thinking I prefer a nautical theme to my canine.
Yeah, like the cape and the hat don't really work together. I suspect the person can't draw bodies because the head doesn't quite fit under the body. Anyway, it works on a number of levels. But anyway, I put that on the set, you know, so I could do that. And I said, wouldn't it be nice if we had a bin here and we had, because I wanted to make it look like a garage or a rumpus room or something like that. So it had a certain ad hoc quality to it. And the whole show felt like that. And I liked that because it wasn't slick. It wasn't like the voice, and there was an element of dagginess to it that I really liked. And so it didn't have any franchise slickness. And the same with this show, and the same, I guess, with everything I do. It looks like it's bolted together in a cottage. The lack of art, I suppose. You know, that's the magic of TV.